The director's report. Director Anderson?
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'm going to move up to the table. I have a PowerPoint to assist me to walk through my report this morning.
I hear the deputy director has a PowerPoint as well. He's not a big fan of PowerPoint, so it's special.
Good morning again, commissioners, members of the public that joined us here this morning. Thank you for being here. I'm going to be, my director's report is going to be primarily about fishing activities in the state and some updates on how those fisheries are going, along with touching on a couple of other important topics. I wanted to start out by just reviewing the spring Chinook allocation and harvest summary. I'm going to go through kind of an update on salmon fisheries that are occurring in different parts of the state. I won't hit them all, but I hit a number of them. Little bit of an update on the activities that the department is undertaking with volunteers, including volunteers on hoof disease. Touch on the public workshop schedule and planning that's associated with our budget and legislative proposals, and then my odds and ends category. So we'll start out with spring Chinook allocation and harvest summary. I will warn you up front that I've got some charts here that have got some really small font, but I'll try to point out the pertinent numbers on those charts. So just in review, relative to our spring Chinook policy objectives, we want to be able to exercise in-season management flexibility to meet our fishery objectives. We have a 30% buffer that's placed on our run size forecast prior to the run update to manage early fisheries. So that buffer is intended to provide some protection in the event that our run forecasts overestimate the total run. During the 2013 recreational fisheries, they were assigned 65% of the ESA impacts. They increased to 70% in 14 through 16 and up to 80% in 2017. So that's as a result of the adoption of your Columbia River policy. And then the balance in each one of those years is assigned to the commercial fisheries. As you know, the share of the ESA allocation for recreational fisheries is shared, with 75% of it being allocated to the fisheries below Bonneville Dam and 25% above Bonneville Dam. After we do our run size update, the highest priority is providing a fishery above Bonneville Dam and in the Snake River. We look to extend our recreational fishery below Bonneville Dam as long into April as possible, with a high probability of 45 uninterrupted days beginning March 1. And then, of course, the department staff comes before the commission and briefs you annually on the effectiveness of meeting our various fishery objectives. Some of the, just as a reminder of where we've got our dams in the Columbia River Basin, Snake River Basin, and there's a couple that I'll be speaking to So Priest Rapids right there. We've got the Hanford Reach right here. Of course, we're sitting, I can't hold this steady, we're sitting right about there. Of course, Bonneville Dam down, built back in 1938, followed by Grand Coulee in 1941, and then the Brownlee Dam on the Snake River, also built in the mid-1900s. So as we look at our hatchery, our spring Chinook releases from our hatcheries, we have 4.5 million that are released above McNary Dam. Those come from six different hatcheries, and those hatcheries are funded by local and federal sources, so public utility districts and federal sources such as Mitchell Act. We have 10.5 million that are released in the Snake River Basin. They come from eight different hatcheries that are funded by federal sources. They're operated by entities such as Idaho Department of Fish and Game, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and Washington. We have 4.8 million that are released between Bonneville to McNary Dam. Those come from six different facilities, and again, those are funded by federal and local sources. Again, the local sources are primarily PUDs. And then there's 11.7 million that are released below Bonneville Dam from 13 different locations, and those hatchery releases are funded by state, both which is Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, federal, primarily Mitchell Act, and again, local sources like Tacoma Power. So it gives you a sense of where our fish are released, the numbers, and the funding sources for those hatchery releases. We have to be cognizant of the USV Oregon agreement, and it has as a requirement that we build in a 30% run forecast buffer that I referenced earlier. We have Indian, non-Indian ESA allocation and Endangered Species Act permits that are covered in the agreement. And in this most recent agreement, we have the catch balance provision, whereby non-Indian total spring Chinook harvest cannot exceed treaty Indian harvest. One of the reasons that it was built in was we're using selective fishing techniques in the non-treaty fishery, which allows us to access more hatchery fish with our ESA impacts. And so prior to this agreement, there were instances when the non-treaty catch was exceeding the treaty harvest. And then, so while we have this ESA impact restriction and limitation, and with the onset of the catch balance provision, in many cases, our catch balance limit is more restrictive for the non-Indian fisheries than our ESA limits are. That is to say, we reach 50% of the catch before we've utilized all of our ESA impacts that are allocated to us. Kind of taking a look back at the Lower Columbia River sport catch balance that was allocated versus the actual. So you can see back in 2010, you probably remember that, for those of you who were a part of the commission at the time, that the allocation for the that went to the Lower River sport fishery below Bonneville Dam, they exceeded their allocation by a significant amount. You can see here they were allocated somewhere in the neighborhood of 17,000. Their actuals were closer to 23,000. That's when we really got into serious discussions about buffers and ensuring that the Lower River didn't preempt the fisheries above Bonneville Dam. You can see in 2011 then that the take, the lighter blue bar, was less than the allocation. That occurred again in 2012, 13, and 14. Zone 6, so Zone 6 is above that area above Bonneville Dam, above to Cindy Priest Rapids, is that right? Is she there? No. Thanks. You can again see allocated versus take in 2010. Allocated versus take, the take was exceeded the allocation in 11, and then it changed in 12 to where the allocation exceeded the take. That same thing held true in 13, but here in 14 we see that the take exceeded the allocation. Snake River Sport, allocated catch balance versus actuals. Again, the same colors. Blue indicate what was allocated. Light blue indicates the take. And you can see the results. So in summary, since 2010, we've built in that 30% forecast buffer. It's assisted us to fairly distribute the recreational allocation. I use the term fairly in that we did not have the lower river fisheries preempting the upriver fisheries from taking their share. Individual fisheries do not always attain their full catch. You saw that primarily due to run timing, update on the timing, and river conditions. We've been using in-season management to redistribute the catch to maximize our area-specific opportunity. In 2014, in all areas, we were able to extend in season as a result of the run size and harvest updates. And remembering that, based on that previous slide where the allocation begins to change from 65 to 70 and on up to 80, that in 14 and beyond, due to the increase in the sport allocation, all of the areas should gain additional opportunity. Obviously, that's dependent, linked to the what happens with the run. And I think, as correctly was pointed out by Mr. Grimm in his testimony, there's not a consensus for changing the current recreational spring Chinook allocation formula between geographic areas. We did embark on a process, look at a number of alternatives, actually several different alternatives about a year ago. We weren't able to come to an agreement or a consensus on that issue, and I understand that there's an interest in us starting that again. I did have some slides built in this that look back at that process. I elected not to walk through that piece. So, going to move away from spring Chinook now and go to the fishery update piece for summer Chinook, Hanford Reach, and the balance of the area geographic areas that are listed there. So, on summer Chinook, we have the Chinook that you got angler. Of course, you got the year. You have anglers. So you can see in 2014, we're up to 29,000 anglers. This is for summer Chinook between Priest Rapids and Chief Joe. Chinook catch, you can see the 6699 number there, right there. That's the catch, the harvest. So the difference between what was caught, the wild fish that were released, what ended up being retained, is the 2,116. And you'll see over here that both in the last 2 years we've had a full mark selective fishery, whereas in the couple of years before that we had a regulation that allowed retention of one unmarked fish. So you can see the impact that that regulation has had in terms of the harvest right there. But you can also see that we really had really good participation from an angler perspective in the fishery this year. Going to Hanford Reach, this is the smallest one. So you can kind of ignore these two bottom ones. This is a boat fishery, this is a bank fishery, and the top one is a summary of both of those. So you can go over here and take a look at the harvest. 5,155 Chinook adults were harvested so far in the Hanford Reach this year. Obviously, it's ongoing. So the harvest is there, you know, coho are very minimal. This simply shows the number of fish that we have sampled in the fishery. So That's what's going on so far. 4,655 anglers so far participated in that fishery. Priest Rapids to Chief Joe. So there's summer Chinook shows up again here. So I won't go over those numbers. They're the same. But over here in the sockeye piece, you can look at the Lake Wenatchee sockeye harvest here at 15,447 versus just over 6,213. Okanagan sockeye harvest here at 30,000 versus 5,800 the year before. So I understand we may have a commissioner that partake in some of that effort. going down river now to buoy 10. These numbers again are for 2014 this year. So 99,000 angler trips. We were shooting for a season objective of August 1 through Labor Day, which this year was on September 1st. We met that objective with some in-season management, and that in-season management was taking the Chinook to a marked selective fishery the last 3 days of the season. That's what enabled us to get us through Labor Day. We've also got to increase the Chinook, or excuse me, the coho bag on September 2nd. And the asterisk by here, by this number, is that these are the total mortalities, so it included release mortalities as well. I didn't have a chance to break the harvest piece out of that, but the harvest makes up the majority of that number. So just above Tongue Point there, up above the Astoria-Megler Bridge, we had a season objective, August 1 to September 14th. We met the objective. We went to a marked selective fishery on September 8th. Actually, that we delayed implementing that a little bit by a couple days, 3 or 4 days. So we didn't have to use it in the entire last week of the fishery to meet the season objective. And then I don't have catch numbers for Warrior Rock down to the up to the dam, but I did have an angler trip number of 120,000. So obviously, lots of effort, lots of folks out there fishing, and pretty good success. Lots of numbers here. This is the ocean fishery. So the first part of the ocean fishery, we had that marked selective fishery that went on for a couple weeks, and that's in the last part of June. That's a kind of a new thing. This is the fourth year that we've been able to do that. Had a quota in there of 9,000, caught 2,086 of that. So that there's a conversion, but the uncaught portion of this 9,000 gets transferred in to the quotas for the balance of the year. So the balance of the year then, for the NS is non-selective. We had 50,000, caught 40,000, really a good Chinook fishing year in the ocean. Our coho quota for marked selective was just under 185,000, catch at 112. We were able to switch that from selective to non-selective on September 2nd. I take that back, September 1st. And so we had a non-selective quota that went on at 29,000, 950. That comes out of this number. And they caught 27,000, had shut down, in particular, Westport a little bit early. We were going to go through the end of the month as a result. But I think everybody was pretty happy with the situation anyway. And given the weather was really crummy after we shut it down, it probably didn't make any difference anyway. But so I didn't get the angler trip numbers, but I do know that we had more anglers participating in the ocean fishery this year than we've had in over a decade. Willapaw Bay, this is on the commercial fishery. So Chinook landings at right around 13,000. 2012, it was 7,510, just as a point of comparison. And our Chinook landings of 13,000 also were significantly higher than what we modeled preseason. Remember that that's kind of a harvest rate approach where we set a season with an assumed harvest rate based on the run size. So if the run size comes in bigger, you keep the season going. And so that's why that number turned out higher than what was modeled preseason. Coho landings, again, 40,000, and they're still fishing. We modeled 25,000, they caught 25,008, just over 25,800 in 2012. So overall, a really good season so far for the Willapa Bay commercial fishery. You remember we talked about the compliance with certain regulations, soak times, use of recovery boxes, those aspects. We had 89 and 100% compliance with that. The lowest one was the 89%. That was on the soak time. We were actually able to monitor in excess of, I'm not going to remember the number, but we monitored a number of sets. We had observers on boats. The ones that did not comply, I believe there were six sets that didn't comply. Three of those, the time is 45 minutes. Three of the six were between 45 and 55 minutes, and the other three were over 55. So I think the commercial fishers really tried to stick close to our best fishing practices. And as a result, there was one day that we held in reserve based to see whether or not if we had a 90% compliance rate that we would provide that extra day. We did that. We provided that extra day, and that was last Sunday. Running up to Puget Sound at Grace Harbor, by the way, has started for the recreational fishery. I don't even have any anecdotal information to share with you. The commercials decided to wait until later in October and utilize their Chinook impacts, which are very small, to access as many coho as they can, so they haven't started yet. But so up to Puget Sound, one of the big fisheries up there that we were able to create 4 years ago is this Chinook selective fishery in Area 9 and 10. So Area 9 up in that Point, south end of Whidbey Island, Admiralty Inlet, that's Area 9. Area 10 down in front of Seattle, Elliott Bay, out in front of Shoal Bay, that area. So really popular fishery. You may recall that we had to scale back our catch quotas out of concern for Lake Washington Wild Chinook during that North Falcon process. You remember how much fun that was. Kind of surprisingly, Area 9 here had a catch quota of 32.18. The actual catch was 28.79, and we achieved the scheduled season of July 16th through August 15th. And then in Area 10, we had a quota of, you can see it there, 11.12, caught 1,043, did have to close that fishery 7 days prior to what we had hoped to get to, but still lasted a little bit longer than we thought. A lot of people thought that was going to get closed by the end of July. We also had a Thompson coho in-season issue. You may recall that we manage our fisheries in Washington, treaty and non-treaty, not to exceed a 10% exploitation rate on Thompson coho, which are in the Fraser River area. And the Canadians, after we were all done with our preseason process, informed us, which is outside the acceptable protocols, that they were going to increase their ceiling exploitation rate on Thompson coho based on a late arriving run size forecast that allowed them under the protocols that we have to have a higher rate. And, you know, we certainly We were concerned that they may be doing that as a result of the big sockeye run and the need to have some additional coho impacts and so on and so forth. But so for a while, we entertained the idea of adding a few Thompson coho impacts to our fisheries and the tribal fisheries. At the end of the day, we decided not to do that and to stick with our preseason plan to not exceed 10%. And it also appears that the Canadian fishery will not take more than what they would otherwise have taken at the lower run size. But having those numbers are not all in yet, but particularly for Commissioner Carpenter, wanted him to know kind of how that worked its way through. Because for a while we were looking at the potential of adding 6 days back to the non-selective coho fishery in Area 5 and perhaps do something with Area 7, but ended up not going there. Fraser fishery, I'm sure Commissioner Kehoe could give you a better update than I can, but huge, big run, 20 million. Unfortunately, we've got a huge diversion rate, which means they're coming down the inside of Vancouver Island instead of coming down the outside and up the straits and presenting themselves to U.S. fishers. The non-treaty catch right now is at about 230,000 or getting close. It's very likely that the United States is going to leave over 1 million fish of its share uncaught as a result of those fish not making themselves available to us in U.S. waters. So that's the fishery update. So I'm going to go from scales to fur now, going to...
Dr. Henderson.
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt, you have a question?
Just a question, first a comment. Director, thank you very much for the Spring Chinook, Summer Chinook update, and especially for the data on the Columbia River, and I'll save my questions for tomorrow when we hear more from the locals on that. But my question deals with Willapa Bay. That was really a positive report with the takes on the commercial fisheries. Do you recall the number of permitted commercial landings? How many vessels actually participated in that?
It would be a guess. Are you accepting guesses this morning?
Yep.
I believe it's about 60.
60, okay.
We issue more. Remember, Willapa Bay, Willapa Gillnet licenses are a combination Willapa Bay, Columbia River. Grace Harbor are combination Grace Harbor, Columbia River. We issue more Willapa Bay, Columbia River licenses than 60. I don't remember the number off the top of my head. However, we have, my recollection is in one of the weeks that we had openings, we had 56, if I'm remembering this right, we had 56 individual vessels make a delivery. That's where I'm getting the number 60 from.
Thank you.
About the imbalance in the Fraser River run because of the diversion rate, does it ever balance out for us? I mean, there's no way that the treaty provides compensation, but do we ever end up with more fish in our waters?
Well, even if we did, we would still be governed by our share under the Pacific Salmon Treaty. So, no, the imbalance won't be, there's no foregone opportunity or equitable adjustment in the following year, that kind of thing. It's, you take each year at a time, you determine each country's share, and then the fish, in large part, does the run size materialize as you expected, and do they migrate in such a way that the United States has access to its share, are the controlling factors as to whether we get our share or not.
Commissioner Kehoe?
While we're still on salmon, yes, I mean, Commissioner Wecker or Chair Wecker, it is frustrating, and there is no real way to get around it. But I would like to say on the Fraser this year, I'd like to commend WDFW staff, particularly Kyle Addix, who I serve on the Fraser panel. Kyle did a tremendous job, as well as the supporting staff, in trying to get the U.S. fleet maximum days so that we could, you know, try to catch as many fish as we could. He's a very strong advocate, not only for and the staff general. We really work together with the tribes to make sure that we get as many opportunities as we can. So I just wanted to let the director know and the commission know that we've got a really good team in place, and they do a good job, even in a very challenging year.
Yeah, and one other comment on the Willapa Bay compliance approach that you used. That's very interesting. I hadn't heard that. It sounds like you alerted the commercial fishers to the fact that if they showed a high compliance rate, they were going to benefit with an additional day. They knew that ahead of time. That sounds like a very good strategy to me.
Yeah, you'll recall that we did some additional work this last spring looking at release mortality rates, and there were some factors that went into whether or not what those release mortality rates were. Soak time was a big piece, use of recovery boxes. And so we assumed a 90% compliance rate to come up with what release mortality rate we were going to use. And so we let them know up front that the number of impacts that you have are based on a 90% compliance rate. If it's less than that, then you're impacting more fish than what we're modeled, so we're going to hold back essentially a day, and that day would be provided if we reach that 90% compliance rate.
So it's a big incentive that they understood at the beginning of the season. That's good.
We had a few that didn't comply, but we're hoping to make believers out of them.
Hmm. Commissioner Mencken?
Yeah, Mr. Director, Phil. This is a question that may be kind of like a non sequitur here. I'm a little embarrassed to even ask the question because I should know the answer. But under ESA permits and USV Oregon, is there a clause in fishery management there that determines where something like a spring Chinook release from a hatchery might occur? Do we have any options as to where we release fish from an individual hatchery, either upstream or downstream?
Well, if you're embarrassed about asking the question, what do you think I feel like if I can answer the question? I know Cindy's here, but we do have a production advisory committee that's part of USV Oregon, and the production advisory committee is made up of the parties to USV Oregon. And as a part of their work, they define, agree on where the releases of fish are going to take place. And I think, is Cindy back there? Oh, good. So she can't prove me wrong if I'm wrong. But there is a production advisory committee. It is pursuant to USV Oregon where those releases occur. Now, your question, can we move them around? I would think that would take agreement amongst the production advisory committee if you were going to do that. So we have an annualized plan of hatchery releases that are associated with USV Oregon.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Director, you explained the Thompson Coho piece very well, and I just think for my colleagues that on the commission and the audience, I serve on the Southern panel. And the Southern panel has called a meeting on October the 14th in Lacey to talk about the issue of the Canadian, the process. It wasn't followed precisely.
Okay. Thank you. All right. You can go ahead.
Okay. So some of the activities associated with hoof disease, we've had on the prevalence of the disease question, we've had a small-scale pilot project that just concluded with the help of volunteers. Results of that pilot are going to be used in designing our larger scale effort that will begin this winter and spring. In terms of the distribution, we are requesting assistance from hunters and the general public to submit observations to assess the spread of the disease. And then on relative to survival, this is an important one. We're developing protocols to implement a study using radio-collared animals to monitor both survival production as well as movements of those animals. And then, as you know, we've been looking at the question of removal of animals that are afflicted with the disease. So we're in the process of developing protocols for lethal removal, including the potential of use of master hunters or other means of having those removals take place, so it's not just DFW staff doing that act, working on that activity. And just wanted to make you aware that we have hired, NATES through the Wildlife Program has hired a hoof disease coordinator that's going to be based in Region 5. As you know, we've submitted our budget packages, our fee proposals, our legislative package to the governor's office, which is under consideration there now. As part of our outreach efforts, we're currently looking at putting together some public workshops. We haven't got all of our locations identified yet, but these are six that we know that we're going to be going. And we'll get you a schedule out in the event that you're one of these occurs in the area where you live or can get to. That'd be great. Obviously, I noted that we don't have a Southeast Washington location here. Spokane's the closest one, so I would be looking to add a Tri-Cities probably location for one of these. We have our East Side North Falcon meeting kind of over across the river over in Kennewick here, and I'll probably take a look at having one there. But we're looking at doing that over the next 6 weeks or so.
Commissioner Smith has a question.
Thank you, Director. What's the structure of these meetings, how long will they last?
We are in the process of building the agenda, the presentation, but the structure is I'm probably going to follow a similar format that I did 4 years ago. I think it was 4 years ago when we went around and did these, so that we're providing information and then an opportunity on each one of the proposals to have, you know, discussion about them, get people's ideas as to where are, you know, are we on the right track? Is this something you'd be willing to support or not? And then help that inform us as we go into the legislative session in January.
And the announcement for each of these regions, getting the word out that these are going to be happening, is that a similar format or?
Well, we'll be, of course, contacting local media outlets to get some help. We'll be doing a news release. We'll be putting them on our website, using probably going out with some emails to some key constituent base email lists that we have to make them aware that we're having these.
Thank you.
Commissioner Schmitten.
Director, I know that we traditionally, or you traditionally, always have met in Brewster, and that's been a very positive, most of the time it's been a very positive meeting. But if looking at the other areas that you go to are all major urban areas, I wonder if you shouldn't think about rotating perhaps to Wenatchee, East Wenatchee, where you're going to get 60,000 population base, versus probably about half that in the Rooster meeting. And maybe every other year might be a good rotation, because you need to have the upper Okanagan views taken into account. But I think you're missing a big base of interested hunters and fishers by not doing the Wenatchee, East Wenatchee sector.
Okay. Yeah, the Brewster one is kind of a specialized one, so to speak. It is not going to be, it will not have the same format as the rest of them, which are going to be primarily focused on budget, legislative package, fee proposal. The Brewster meeting will have a much smaller portion of the meeting dedicated to that topic, so that we can address a number of the other topics that are important to the constituents there. But thanks for the suggestion on adding Wenatchee to our list here of these other types of meeting outreach. Finishing up here with just odds and ends doesn't mean they're not important. I can't remember what I called this category last time. Stemelt land acquisitions, we have those. There's, you may recall, we've had four parcels that we have been working closely with this Stemelt partnership. They are areas that are very important for elk in particular. They are currently under DNR, Department of Natural Resource ownership. Several years ago, we thought we had an approach that would result in the Department of Fish and Wildlife acquiring title to those four parcels. That ran into some glitches along the way. We ended up leasing all four parcels from DNR. We subsequent to that indicated that we wanted to purchase two of them, and then, which, because that's what we had in terms of available funds, that we thought were going to be sufficient funds to purchase all four. So the lease on the other, the purchase of those two parcels is about complete, but not quite. So there's been a concern about these other two, and DNR was entertaining the potential of leasing a portion of at least one of those parcels for agricultural use, orchards in particular. That was a concern for the partnership. So we have been working to try and get to a point where we could acquire those other two parcels so that all four would be under DFW ownership, which is the desired outcome by the Stemelt partnership. We've been working on looking at the potential for a land exchange. We have some parcels where they're not providing a particular value to meet the objectives of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. However, they do provide some opportunity for timber harvest. So we've are in the midst of looking at a land exchange whereby we would obtain owner title to these two parcels, and in exchange DNR would get title to several other parcels. I know Clay's here, he probably know. I think there's either five or six parcels. He's either nodding his head or shaking at one of the two. And but there's some encumbrances on the revenue source that was used to acquire those parcels that we want to do the transfer with, whereby we need to go and get an okay from the federal entities that provided the funding to purchase those parcels. So we're in the process of doing that. That takes a while. So I'm going to be working with Commissioner Goldmark to see if we can get some sort of a letter of agreement or letter, some sort of a document whereby we would agree, provided these, that we get the approval of the people that provided the revenue to move ahead with the exchange when that approval takes place. So we're working on that. It's not done yet. Need to have, so so that's that one. The Commissioner Schmidt referenced the Fish Lake blue algae issue. There's one resort there that is called the Cove Resort on that lake, and it's owned by Scott West. We've been in contact with him last night. We were also in an attempt to reach Mary Small, who's the Chelan Douglas Health District person that would have some information about the test. Apparently their offices operate on a 4-day week, so they're closed today. So we're going to have to wait till Monday to reach them, as I understand it. If that's wrong, I apologize. But the test occurred on September 17th. In looking, you can go on to a map. I can give you the link to it if you want, and you can take a look and see where all the algae tests were done in the state. And in eastern Washington, it looked to me like there were about 24 lakes that have been tested. Don't know the exact time frame over which those tests occurred. But I do know that the one on Fish Lake was the first one that has ever been taken in the database that they have on their website. I do know that it was taken on September 17th. I do know that the parts per million, I think we're in the 700 parts per million, and the acceptable level is under 100. I can't remember the exact number, but it's well above. There are four other lakes that are currently have restrictions on them as a result. One of them is Green Lake in Seattle. But there are some other places. So we'll continue to work that issue and work with Mr. West, as well as communicate with the health district to run that down. We had a meeting that four of our commissioners attended with some recreational representatives to discuss some concerns that they identified in a letter that they wrote back in June. We had that meeting back in the first week of August. We identified five different areas, really four areas, where there were concerns and some follow-up and action items. Hatchery reform, hatchery genetic management plans was one. Co-management with the tribes, and particularly in Puget Sound, was another. Implementation of your Columbia River policy was a third. Recognizing the importance of the economic benefits that recreational fishing provides to the state economy, and reflecting that in being mindful of that in the decisions that we make. And then there was a fifth category that had point-no-point boat launch, derelict gear removal and regulations, and the Deschutes River hatchery were the other three. So we did have a chance to share kind of our first outline of how we are proposing to respond to those and prepare ourselves to respond to those. We shared that with the Fish Committee last night. It's in this table. I can provide that to the other commissioners. We've essentially gone through and identified each issue. We've identified a lead person within the agency, and then we have kind of a status of that. We also met with Heath Heikkila and Dave Knudsen 2 days ago, I think it was 2 days ago, in preparation of the meeting that we have with the governor's staff that I think is on October 6th, if I remember right. So we're coordinating on that. We also had two staff members in our nation's capital here this week working on legislative matters, budget issues, but in particular the Yakima Integrated Water Plan, along with other people from other entities that are a part of the Yakima Integrated Water Plan, Integrated Plan. But another piece of good news that came out of that trip was there's a sunset provision in the Magnuson Act for state authority over the Dungeness crab fishery in federal waters adjacent to the states of Washington, Oregon, and California. And in the absence of that sunset clause being removed through the reauthorization of the Magnuson Act, that provision's going to go away, which I can safely say will cause chaos in the management of our commercial Dungeness crab fisheries along the coast. The Magnuson Act reauthorization process looks like it could take years. It may follow the same route as that of reauthorization of the Endangered Species Act and the Marine Mammal Protection Act, which haven't been reauthorized for a decade or more. So there's concern about that sunset clause coming into play. But we've made some good progress, both with legislators from our congressional members from Washington as well as Oregon, to find another pathway to get that sunset clause changed or removed. We're having a meeting with our commercial fishing stakeholders here next week to talk about the fee proposal that's a part of our package submitted to the governor's office, and also talking about our 15% cut package. And then I'll just finish up the Quinault Treaty Area, which is the QTA acronym there, and the Point No Point tribes. You're, of course, fully aware that there's been a dispute, particularly between the Kulu tribe. The Macaw tribes had an interest, which I don't have listed there, in Lower Elwha, Jamestown, and Port Gamble. We did have a meeting with Lower Elwha, Quileut, and ourselves here about a week ago, trying to map out a path forward, which will include Lower Elwha providing us their best evidence to substantiate their traditional hunting claim in the area under discussion. We're having historical research associates look at that information so we can get a kind of a third-party peer review of with people with expertise in that area to help us then inform a decision about whether to enter into another co-management hunting agreement with the Lower Elwha tribe. The Jamestown and Port Gamble's on a bit of a different timeline. I did finally get confirmation this morning that I'll be having a telephone conversation with the chairs of Port Gamble and Jamestown on Monday, and I'm hoping to break that seemingly deadlock loose with that conversation, so hopefully we can move down a similar path that we're doing with Lower Elwha, but time will tell. So that completes my director's report for this morning, and I know I'm looking forward to see the deputy director's PowerPoint, and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions, any further questions for the director? Looks like we asked all that we needed to. Deputy Director Storr.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. I wanted to talk about two, I think, exciting, interesting initiatives that are going on within the agency. And I've got a handout for the first before I move to the PowerPoint, so okay. Please be patient. I think the Commissioners have heard us talk at times in the past about a semi-formal initiative we have going within the department called our Conservation Initiative. And what it's about is a kind of a continuing internal discussion about how we improve service delivery, how we improve resource protection, and trying to keep the sort of performance improvement theme in front of us. This last summer, we started a pilot project with the intent of trying to build support in local communities for the work we do, and do that by trying to understand and promote the economic benefits that we're part of as we set these fishing and hunting and recreation opportunities up. And so we selected a couple of settings where the intent would be to go out and engage the local communities in a discussion about what is it that we do in that area and how could we better market or support or quantify the benefits that those activities bring. And we selected two areas. One is the Brewster-Poteros-Bridgeport area, and specifically the sockeye fishery, which is a major event there that we've heard a little bit about. The other is the commercial crab season in Westport. And, you know, unknown at the time, what happened in Brewster and Poteros, Bridgeport, with the Carlton Complex fire sort of added to the need to get out and engage the community and look for ways that we could help, frankly. And so we have had a series of meetings, two meetings with the Chamber of Commerce, with city council leadership, with business owners, and we're looking at short-term and long-term ways to develop tourism and quantify benefits. Some very productive, some pretty exciting meetings. We were worried about going up and meeting post-fire, so soon post-fire, but you know, pretty wide open arms, pretty well received. And so we're looking on the short term, and it's described in this little piece I just handed out, of doing things to augment or complement the outreach that's going on to say, hey, there's a lot to do in Okanagan County. They've had this terrible tragedy, this catastrophic event happen. But there's hiking, there's hunting, there's fishing that can take place there, and a fairly major campaign's going on that we want to be part of. That's what we're doing on the short term. On the longer term, with the Chief Joe Hatchery opening up and the Chinook releases, in about 3 years, there's going to be a new major fishery up there. And so we are going to, over the course of those 3 years, do things around reaching out to the Hispanic community, do things around setting up within some of the festivals or events that they have locally, setting up opportunities to teach kids how to fish. Look for ways to promote those fisheries. We are also working on with the PUD, a new boat ramp up in the Bridgeport area. So there's going to be access, there's going to be some new fisheries, there's going to be economic benefit, and it's pretty exciting. We've got another set of meetings on the 1st of October to put some of this in place. So I just wanted you to be aware of that, and if you're interested in learning more about the details, just let me know.
Great.
So now I will move to my PowerPoint.
Okay.
With Tammy's help.
We're rooting for you. Do a good job.
Okay. So the other initiative that I wanted to report on is the outcome of the Governor's Blue Ribbon Task Force on Parks and Outdoor Recreation. The task force completed its 6 months' work here just recently, and a report went to the Governor. When the Governor initiated this task force, he wanted to address the fact that the state lacked strategies for transforming its approach on outdoor recreation to promote the opportunities and the quality of life that this recreation presents to the state and attracts new businesses. Estimates of about 227,000 jobs, $22.5 billion in consumer spending, and the generation of some significant state and local tax revenue as a result of outdoor recreation. And then the focus on kids, on youth, and wanting our children to experience Washington's magnificent resources. And the governor's words were to sleep in a wet sleeping bag and to, you know, smell like a campfire. So a lot of energy. We, as I said, went through a six-month active public engagement meeting, met in six meetings across the state, received 3,700 public comments. I don't know if you visited the website, but the very active conversation going on a website that was set up, developed five priority action areas and 12 near-term actions that could take place, and I'll run through some of those, and recommendations for the future. Priority action areas were divided into these categories: growing the outdoor recreation economy, leading the way to outdoor recreation, pulling more people outside, inspiring the outdoor recreation culture, opening up more opportunities, and sustaining our outdoor recreation assets? How do we pay for all of this? These were the general categories that were used to group and order the recommendations that came forward. Some of the things that were identified as needs that received a lot of attention was the need to designate specific outdoor recreation industry and create a sector lead. When we think about aerospace, or we think about computer related, IT related industries, we don't oftentimes group together the outdoor recreation components. And so look at that in total and identify that as a major budget driver for the state, revenue driver for the state. Get more organized about that. There was talk about establishing an outdoor recreation coordinating council to help with that effort. Reinvest in No Child Left Inside program. That's a program that I believe was nested in parks in the past and has funding has diminished for it. Incorporate more outdoor recreation in K through 12 core curriculum. Diversify appointees to outdoor recreation state boards and commissions, getting a broader set of participants, culturally, urban, rural, gender related, etc. And then enact the marine tourism legislation. And I was trying to remember exactly what that was, but I believe it was an effort in the recent past to establish legislation to promote and market boating opportunities and water access opportunities.
Deputy Director Storr, Commissioner Smith has a question.
On point four, without getting into too much detail, did they have a plan for that, or is that just a sentence?
Well, I think, Commissioner Smith, that was the intent was to what's the board that you sit on, Commissioner Smith?
Which one?
Which of the many?
The intent was to build on some of the work that's gone on in terms of bringing outdoor recreation into grade schools. And there's been a number of initiatives, and I can't remember now some of the specifics, but with Margaret Tudor and...
Pacific Education.
Pacific Education, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's that type of a program.
So was Margaret in... Was
Margaret?
Involved in that?
Yes, Dr. Tudor has been involved.
Thank you.
Funding, of course, is always a challenge, and a number of ideas came forward. Again, these are just recommendations to the governor for his consideration and potentially for the legislature to consider. But there, the Discover Pass had some supporters and some detractors, as we've all heard. Ultimately, the task force decided to recommend retaining the Discover Pass until a long-term dedicated funding source could replace it. There were ideas about establishing annual motorhome and travel trailer excise taxes or bottled water sales taxes, watercraft excise taxes, a number of ideas kicked around there. You can imagine that they're all pretty controversial. Youth athletic facility grant programs. If you look at the number of baseball fields, soccer fields, other playfield facilities, the number of those that are funded via the Recreation Conservation Office and the grants there, it's pretty impressive. And so this notion of continuing with that effort, allow the continued use of the real estate excise tax for local park operations, by getting rid of sunset clause that occurs at the end of 2016 was discussed. Fund and protect current outdoor recreation grant programs. Those are primarily the RCO efforts. And then remove a 23-cent cap on a portion of the gas tax that's attributed to off-road recreation, so you could potentially access more of the gas tax. So, again, these were just ideas that sort of floated to the top. It was a lot of controversy around a number of them, and they go to the governor for his consideration as he puts his budget forward. Just some findings on funding. Support for recreation programs has dropped and shifted from the general public. State general funds have gone away for the most part to recreation users. As I mentioned, a number of people, especially around state parks, feel the Discover Pass discourages participation. A call for or support for the effort we have to improve the administration of the Discover Pass. You will see in this next year a different looking pass made of a more durable material, kind of a plastic-based material. We're doing a number of administrative things to improve the look and the feel and the use of the Discover Pass as we speak. A little bit more, I won't go through all of these, but a little bit more detail on some of those revenue proposals I mentioned before. And that's what I have.
Great. Commissioner Smith.
Could you just, NOAA's presence on that, could you give us an overview of?
Noah McCord,
yeah.
Our youth leader.
Our youth leader.
Yeah, the task force was made up of 25 individuals, 15 were members of the public, industry, businesses, and 10, and they were voting members, and then there were 10 governmental representatives. I represented the agency, and those were non-voting positions, so we had 25 individuals plus four legislators, Representative Bies, Representative Theringer, Senator Parlette, and Senator Ranker. So very strong legislative interest and support. And one of the 15 public members was Noah McCord, who was our youth leader. Noah's right now at the University of Denver in Colorado, having graduated from high school. But impressive young man. We'd sit in some of these task force meetings, and there'd be an assignment, and you'd go around the circle, and people would report out on their assignment. And whoever was sitting next to Noah was always a little embarrassed to go after him because he was very eloquent. He was funny, did his homework, and so he was a great contributor, and it was good to have him there.
And he was the only youth, right?
He was the only youth. So.
Or young person.
Young man, except for me.
Peyton Manning.
Okay, I was thinking as you were talking about the disincentive that is posed by the Discover Pass fee. You know, we've struggled. Every state, when commissioners would attend WAFA meetings, we'd talk about this problem of how do we get non-consumptive user groups. That's the term used. Those who don't buy hunting and fishing licenses but recreate on public lands, how do we get them to pay their fair share? And the Discover Pass was one of the ways, one of the few ways that we ever heard of any state in the West getting an attempt, not necessarily terribly effective, problematic at best, but at least we were trying to come up with a way of tapping into those non-consumptive users. Do you think there's any chance that we can take some of the sting out of the Discover Pass by recruiting companies to provide a discount if you can show your Discover Pass? Some of the companies like Cabela's that make a lot of their income off of recreation on public lands have a stake in our success. I think there's any chance of, has that been discussed at all?
There are a number of discussions going on both with legislative staff and then internally within the three agencies about how you might incentivize access. That's one of them. You know, there's talk about bundling up and providing some level of profit for someone who buys in bulk, the opportunity for some profit there. There's a number of ideas that are out there. I imagine the legislature will probably engage again like they have the last couple of years in some of those. So we'll see. The task force, the discussion was along two lines. There were still a number of task force members who lamented the loss of general fund. And, you know, this is a public benefit, and so there ought to be general fund coming towards it. And so why do we need the pass? But there was also recognition of it ought to be more than hunters and fishers that pay for some of this, for instance, access to WDFW lands in that case, or DNR lands. But it was a pretty lively discussion.
I bet. Commissioner Smith?
Yeah, the list put forward is kind of familiar ground up there. I mean, and I think the battlefield is littered with bodies on some of those, you know. Did the task force look at, I mean, we're not the only state going through this sort of a discussion. Did the task force look at other states to see if there were some things that aren't kind of the same old, that were, you know, unique or new to raise revenue?
Commissioner Smith, not extensively, although we did have, as we, one of our first meetings, a report from the Recreation Conservation Office staff that supported this effort on what other states have done and funding ideas from other states. And so a little bit.
You know, just throw out an idea, and maybe Margaret could run with this one a bit, but or somebody. That would be a great topic for some master's thesis work and in partnership with universities, because that's just really just a lot of slogging through data and states, you know, and coming up. I would like to think that out there in the other 49 states that there are some things that we could learn from, and that could really, instead of that, I mean, it could be a nice bold color up on that list too, but I just throw that out.
Okay.
And if I could help in that, you know, let me know too.
So next steps are governor. We'll see what the governor does with this. You know, this is in the face of the McCleary decision and all the tight budget discussions that are going to be coming in with the session.
And what percentage, do you recall, what percentage of state parks budget was covered by Discover Pass? I mean, the intent was that all of it would ultimately be supported. Do you know what it ended up being?
I believe it was around 40%.
Okay, so quite a ways to go before it achieves what was hoped for.
Quite a ways.
Yeah, okay. Okay, great job. Excellent job with the PowerPoint.
Thank you.
The narration was outstanding.
You should do it more often.
Yeah.
Okay, we've reached the break.